The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Straight Outta Cobham, where we look ahead to the Champions League final between Chelsea and Manchester City in Porto this weekend. Who should start? Where will the game be won and lost? Can Tuchel outwit Guardiola again? These questions and more discussed, debated and dissected in the company of the men in the know as regards Chelsea FC. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Hello listener, I hope you're keeping the nerves in check as we get ever closer towards Saturday's showpiece, an all-English affair between Chelsea and Manchester City at the Estadio do Dragão as Chelsea look to emulate the class of 2012 by lifting the trophy with the big ears for the second time. I'm Juan Mata Davis-Adams, joined as usual by The Athletic's Chelsea expert. Salomon Simon Johnson is here.
I've just stuck it in the top corner. Hello.
So too Didier Dominic Fifield.
Oh, good grief. Really? Okay, I'll take that. Fair enough.
Yeah, thanks. You think that's bad? This is even more of a stretch. David Louis-M to me.
Oh. Wow. You can't spell 2021 without all of the numbers needed for 2012.
Sure, that's true, yeah. Liam, as we heard in Monday's pod, you're bound for Porto. How's it worked in terms of preparation? Presumably there's been lots of COVID-related hoops for you to jump through.
Yeah, I'm going to need to create like a dossier of documents to get into the country that I've been sent over the last couple of days. Thankfully, Hannah, our admin person, is incredibly organized and has helped me a lot already. And yeah, it all seems to be in order, apart from, you know, the PCR testing, which is a constant source of stress with flights these days. But as long as that all comes through, I will be flying out to Porto on Friday afternoon, flying back Sunday afternoon, perhaps with the Champions League trophy in tow. Not literally, obviously. I'm only travelling hand luggage.
I once flew back with the Champions League trophy actually in tow. I was handed it on the flight back from Istanbul.
When was this?
Istanbul 2005 with Liverpool. I've got a photograph of me holding big ears. It's dreadful. I don't know why I brought this up now, but yeah, that's my proudest moment ever. And it had nothing to do with me.
Hopefully you can feel the jealousy coming off the Zoom screen from me and Simon here, who are not going on Saturday and have never touched the Champions League trophy.
Oh, hey, don't speak too soon. Oh.
Here we go.
I pose. It's heavy, isn't it, Dom?
Yes.
Let's rub it in, Matt, for Matt a bit more. It's really heavy. I felt like I should have had like I should have a gym workout anyway, but I felt like I should have had a gym workout beforehand to prep for it. I held it shortly after Chelsea won it in 2012 at Stamford Bridge because it was, I think we had like some kind of post-debrief. Chelsea were in very generous mood and they brought the trophy along. And as I said, I think I had a slightly bit more muscle after holding it.
The UEFA Cup or Europa League trophy was heavier, I thought. That was the following
was
year,
it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
I didn't get to hold that one.
That came down the back of the plane where the press were shoved on the official trip back from... Where did that final take place? Amsterdam, wasn't it? Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yep. Happy days. Hopefully somebody gets to enjoy that on...
It'll be Matt's turn.
I've never even held the Zenith Data Systems trophy.
Oh, so now there's a trophy. Now we're talking. Love it.
Surely I'm due. Simon, here's a tweet from Charlie that I'm going to put for you. Charlie simply says, I just need somebody to tell me it's going to be okay. You're the optimist amongst the bunch. Please help, Charlie.
You've asked me. It's all going to be okay, Charlie. Is that all you need to hear from me? That's it. I'll just say it's all going to be okay. Look, let's be positive.
Even when you say that, you don't sound positive.
Look, Chelsea have got a great chance. I think in a weird kind of way, the build-up's been perfect for them. I know people say three defeats in four, etc. But in a way, that's been perfect for them because everyone is saying it's Manchester City's trophy to lose, essentially. It's Pep Guardiola, the best team since sliced bread. No one's really talking about Chelsea that much, I don't think. I'm getting that vibe that it's just all over before it's even started. And as the piece that came up that we put up on the site on Thursday morning, I interviewed Eddie Newton, the assistant coach, ex-assistant coach of from 2012 success, and he said it's exactly the same, that the feeling is exactly the same. He talks about how he was when he walked onto the coach, the steely determination, there was just pure silence. And he felt the steely determination, we're going to prove everyone wrong, that Bayern Munich felt they just had to turn up to pick up the trophy. Everything was against them, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. And he's going, I'm feeling the same now. And he talks about that as Azpilicueta and Rudiger, he said, these are two guys that are just going to be, this is going to be fuel to them, that everyone's writing Chelsea off, that this is, it's going to provide that extra, not that you really need to get fired up for a final, he was saying, but it just gives you that extra motivation. Chelsea are a good side. Are they as good as Man City? I think we can clearly say no, given who won the title. But on their day, they can be a very, very good side. And Tuchel's got them well organised. I just think, as Newton said, the first goal is vital. And if Chelsea get it, they're going to be very tough to break down.
But of course, Simon, you say everything was against Chelsea in 2012, but all the UEFA livery and all the colours and merchandising was blue, as Petr Cech noticed in the build-up, whereas in Moscow it was all red. So when I touch down in Portugal, I will report back as to what colours UEFA are using, because I feel like this could be decisive.
Surely the dragout will have more blue. Yeah,
I was going to say, Porto is going to be quite
but
blue,
what shade,
isn't it?
What shade of blue?
Yeah, I think it's quite a dark blue, isn't it? Quick, Google.
More updates on this as we get it. Follow Liam's Twitter feed for that. Later on, we're going to get the City perspective from David Mooney, but let's see how Chelsea's preparations are going. So I think the first thing we should update people on is the injury status of Edouard Mendy and N'Golo Kanté. Liam, the club released pictures of Chelsea training yesterday and they were both involved, so that's a positive sign.
Yeah, I don't think Chelsea are going to be too keen to disclose the exact level of their participation. That's the advantage of still pictures. you can show they're there and not much more than that. But based on everything Tuchel has said, Chelsea seem quite confident that both of them will be good to go for that game. And, you know, I think they're both important, obviously, but I think Kante's absolutely vital. And they didn't play him on the final day of the Premier League season, I'm convinced, to give him the best possible chance for this game. So I think Chelsea he'll be on the pitch for Chelsea, and I think he'll be close enough to ready to be able to give something like his normal self in that game.
Yeah, he managed all right, half fit in the Europa League final, didn't he, in 2019? And I guess with Mendy as well, if it's ribs, they're just still going to hurt, but he probably won't hurt them anymore, so he should be all right. Speaking of hurt...
He's got other ribs, it's fine.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Speaking of hurt, hurtfully described as the Straight Outta Cobham dream team in the piece published on The Athletic earlier this week. Me and producer Lucy really felt the sting of that one. The chaps debated who should start, where and when. We won't go through the whole team, although interestingly, your three selection was exactly the same as the one that I'd cooked up. Is that interesting? Probably not. A couple of positions I did want to debate, though. You guys chatted about the Reece James to right centre-back experiment and whether that's run its course. The logic behind that, Dom, I suppose, is that you miss James's crossing ability if he's playing centre-back, but also he absolutely destroyed Benjamin Mendy at the Etihad a few weeks ago. Now, I guess it might be Zinchenko rather than Mendy, but surely you've got to put James in what is his best position, particularly given that, you know, Azpilicueta wasn't particularly quick 5 years ago, and certainly at Villa it felt like he'd maybe seen the best of his days in that right wing-back role.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there is an argument that when City play with those slippery, fluid front three, that having a centre-back with some pace like James has got might be an asset, I guess. But it does detract from what Chelsea will offer. And there is much to be said about a player that can carry the ball upfield and away from your own penalty area at pace and get it away from your box, basically. And Reece James playing as a right wing back would certainly do that. It's no coincidence, I don't think, that in the two games against City under Tuchel, he's played right wing back both times and done well. So I think we will see Azpilicueta slotting in again on the right side of the back three. And hopefully James gets to stretch his legs and offer a threat. I'm not saying that they're going to be flinging a load of crosses into the box, you know, hoping that a Kai Havertz or a Timo Werner can get on the end of them with their heads. But his interplay and the threat that he poses going forward will be an asset if he's playing on that berth.
Centre mid, Simon, seems like the most troublesome position for Thomas Tuchel to decide on at the moment. If we say you're going to put Kante in there regardless, it's a big risk to therefore put a semi-fit Kovacic next to him, but you've got a bang out of form Jorginho or a wild card choice of Billy Gilmore. Of course, did really well at the Etihad the other week, but against a different Manchester City team. It's probably going to be Jorginho and Kante, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it has to be for the reasons you highlighted, that Kovacic, he's short of football over the last month, and his couple of appearances, he's looked off the pace, and with Conte sort of question marks over how 100% he is, you don't want two question marks in two key positions. And Jorginho, look, he's had some ropey performances, but he's also had some good ones. So Chelsea will be hoping that pairing, which has played in some of the big games in the run-in, works just one more time. And Jorginho, when he is on it, you know, I'm not his biggest fan, but he does bring that sort of element of calmness in the way he can play keep ball. It's just the worry is when he gives it away in his own third. That's something that Man City will be hoping to exploit if they can get on top of him and press him.
Yeah, be harsh on Mateo Kovacic, who's been part of three Champions League winning squads for Real Madrid and hasn't got on the pitch in any of those finals. Front three-wise, Liam, it's Mount, Havertz and Werner, isn't it? And that's almost as much because others have kind of played their way out of it as much as those three have cemented the place.
Well, that's what I think it should be. Since we've done the piece and I've been thinking about it, I'm not so sure Tuchel will start Havertz. I think given the way he's played Man City previously, he might be more inclined to play Werner as the nine with either Pulisic or Ziyech in that front three, just to have as much speed as possible to exploit City's high defence. But I do think that's what it should be. I think it should be Havertz as the focal point, dropping deep, able to ask different questions of Ruben Dias, John Stones, Aymeric Laporte, depending on which two of those three starts, and allowing Werner to still stretch the game vertically while he and Mount kind of knit things together between the lines. I just think that's the best balance. And as you say, it's probably the best choice on recent form.
I do think that the Ziyech argument shouldn't be underestimated, though, because he has impressed in those two matches against City specifically. And I just, something's sort of nagging away at me. We mentioned in that piece, he is a potentially a big game player. He is somebody that will impress on the biggest stage. And I just have a suspicion that this might be his moment. I don't know. I hope it is. But I just wonder whether him supplying a Werner and Werner stretching City with his pace might open up a bit more space for Ziyech to operate in and to flourish in. So one to watch. Just sort of nagging down on that one.
Let's get to some questions that have come in from Twitter. Here's somebody else called Matt who asks, should Chelsea try and control the game or would it be wiser to sit back and counter as done at home versus Atletico? Simon, it's one thing trying to control a game against City, but it's quite a difficult thing to do in practice.
Yeah, but I think Chelsea's shown in the games against Man City of late that they can control the game. It's not like when they beat them that they just sat back and City had, you know, dominated them for long periods. Yes, they had spells in the games, but Chelsea had spells in the game as well. And they have the ability to play keep ball. I don't think Chelsea would be a shrinking violet. This is not going to be 2012 where it's just a rear guard action and trying to nick something at the other end. I think Chelsea are a better team than that. Not saying that they're better than the 2012 team, I hasten to add. But just that the way they play, it's not going to be complete sort of all. It's not going to be a Villarreal against Man United. Topical. You know, and but who knows? It might be a penalties job, and I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happens. Man City, I think, as I said at the start, I think the pressure's all on them to try and impose their game on them, on Chelsea. They haven't really played well against Chelsea since Tuchel took over. Of course, they dominated Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. But now we're going to see the very best Man City team. Can they do better than the last two?
A kind of related note, Royal Blue wants to know, other than team selection, do you feel Tuchel should do anything different than the tried and tested methods that got him success in the recent past against Manchester City, other than counter-pressing and formation? Liam, it would be strange if they changed the approach now, wouldn't it? Even though the form's not been great in recent weeks.
Yeah, well, we're only a couple of weeks removed from Tuchel saying that finals weren't the time to try tactical tricks. Before dramatically swapping Reece James and Cesar Azpilicueta to nullify Jamie Vardy. So maybe we can't take everything Tuchel says this week at face value, but I would be surprised if there are any major tactical departures. He's built this Chelsea revival on a very, I wouldn't say rigid, but very sort of organised tactical structure and very well-drilled tactical structure, both with the ball and without the ball. And I think any sort of significant tactical tweaks you make now would risk moving away from that and undoing what has got Chelsea here. So I think they'll try and do what they've done against City the last two times. They'll try and control the game. They'll try and draw City onto them, use their press against them and play those quick passes to try and release Werner and kind of play from there. And I don't see any reason to expect anything other than a close game. And even if Chelsea are underdogs, in a close game, anything can happen.
Now, as we know, Chelsea's previous two Champions League final appearances have both gone the distance. With that in mind, here's Mark asking, if the match goes to penalties, which players will be named as the five to take them? And could a Jorginho Panenka win the match? I got my five. Let's see what you think. If somebody, anybody who wants to chip in with an alternative or shoot me down, please feel free. I'm going Azpilicueta, Jorginho, Werner, Mount and Havertz. Any advance on those five names? Reece James, maybe? You can thump a ball.
I was going to say, I hope no one does chip in.
I think Ziyech will be on the pitch by then, so he'll take one.
Yeah, I mean, they've got... I did this in a piece earlier this season. They've got plenty of players that take penalties, either for previous clubs or for their countries. The fascinating one is whether Werner is in that list. And
has drama. Scored Champions League penalties this season, hasn't he?
Can't be offside.
Yeah, but the drama, you know, you can just imagine him stepping up, what would be going through his head. But we know Jorginho will take one. I think Havertz will take one if he's on the pitch, or Ziyech. Pulisic takes them for the US. So imagine he'll be there. Mount will want to step up. I know he missed the one against Spurs earlier this season, but he's generally been pretty good in those situations. So they're not short of candidates, which is encouraging, but I think you'd be hoping the game doesn't get to that.
How about this for a left-field sub, though? Kepa for Mendy, because in terms of shootout records and just penalty records, Mendy's record, good goalkeeper, terrible at penalties. I think he's only saved a couple in his whole career. Whereas Kepa, the one thing you can sort of say about him and his Chelsea career, he has starred in a few shootout wins. I think Tottenham being one, if memory serves you right, in the League Cup. Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League semi-final. So, yeah, could this be a sort of a left field being a bit mischievous here? And, of course, we all remember the penalty shootout that Kepa insisted he play a part in the League Cup final against Man City. Maybe it'd be second time lucky.
Dom, do you think there's any chance that Thomas Tuchel would be influenced in any way by what happened in the Europa League final? Because all the talk on Twitter before that went to penalties was David De Gea hasn't saved any of the last 25 penalties that he's faced. And could they have made that substitution? So does that make it a bit more likely? And the other thing I found interesting was that United didn't choose to go first in the shootout. And statistically, apparently that means your odds drop from 50-50 to 40-60 against to actually win the shootout. Is that the kind of thing that Tuchel will be aware of, or is it just too random to take that into consideration?
From the days when, I remember when one of the, I can't remember which cup final it was, I'm sure Chelsea were involved though. Didn't Petr Cech have all the penalty takers written on an iPod? Do you remember iPods?
pre-iPads.
Yeah, Ben Foster did the same as well, didn't he? And then Jordan Pickford had them on the water bottle in 2018.
I don't think you can say anything is too pernickety on stuff like this. The level of preparation is extensive, not least because a lot of these guys have so much time on their hands, particularly on match day, actually. Looking back to Moscow in 2008, that was a 10:45 p.m. kickoff. And the players just had nothing to do during that day. I mean, I was doing a piece on that this week, and Wayne Rooney apparently hung around the team hotel, the Manchester team hotel that day, watching Sister Act 2 on his laptop, reveling in Whoopi Goldberg as opposed to whether John Terry was putting in decent tackles and in games against him. So I think it wouldn't be a surprise if that type of stuff has cropped up, has been analysed. I wouldn't say that it would be hinge at all on the events in the Europa League final in Gdansk. I think this stuff, type of stuff, has probably been thought about a long time. They're probably well prepared and advanced. They will know about City's penalty takers already. The goalkeepers will be learning about them. And that's probably all three goalkeepers, to be honest, because you never know the scenario. And on the ends, yeah, I can see that coming through. But that may be a whim of the captain on the night, you know, on the coin toss. So we'll see. But it wouldn't surprise me if that level of preparation is there.
I don't know how many people know this story, but Chelsea's first Champions League final appearance in Moscow was marked by exhaustive preparation for what the eventual penalty shootout that transpired. They'd done a lot of research on Edwin van der Sar's tendencies and figured out that he tended to dive in the direction of penalty takers hitting across themselves. So left-footed takers hitting to the keeper's left, right-footed takers hitting to the keeper's right. And they instructed all of the Chelsea penalty takers to hit to the opposite side. And if you watch that penalty shootout back, which I'm convinced no supporter has ever done, you'll see that all of the Chelsea takers stick to that plan and they all send Van der Sar the wrong way in the first five takers, including Terry, who is an inch away from scoring if he doesn't slip. So the plan almost worked perfectly. But Van der Sar started to figure it out. And by the time Anelka steps up, you can see on the footage, he actually points at the direction he knows Anelka's supposed to go. It freaks Anelka out. He decides to go the other way and Van der Sar saves it.
And I don't think we should also forget that Willy Caballero, he may not get on the pitch, but he is going to know quite a lot of the City players and their preferred sides. So you can imagine Mendy in particular, because I was kind of tongue-in-cheek about Kepa coming on. Can't see it happening. But you can imagine he's going to be telling the guys, and they'll probably be asking him, you know, oh, what does Kevin De Bruyne do when he takes a penalty, etc. So I think that insight can't be underestimated.
The level of analysis these days, though, is remarkable, isn't it? I mean, they will each have their own, I don't know, email dossiers of everything about their opponent, their direct opponent. And for the goalkeepers, that will be on the penalties as well. It's astonishing the level of detail they go into.
Well, if it does go all the way, two things I want to see. Somebody's got to David Luiz it, because that was just amazing. And also Sergio Aguero to try a Panenka would probably be quite helpful for Chelsea's cause. Well, joining us now to offer the Manchester City perspective from the Athletic's Why Always Us podcast, it's David Mooney. David, it's City's first final. How's the build-up been for them? Is it footloose and fancy-free or weighed down by the burden of expectation?
I don't know about the club itself. I'm nervous as hell, though. So I don't know. I don't know what that says about us as fans. I think judging from the outside, obviously Guardiola and Gundogan gave their press conference on Monday. They seem remarkably laid back for what is ultimately the biggest game of the season now. So I don't know. It feels from the outside looking in, it feels like the situation at City is quite calm, quite comfortable. And, you know, they're almost at peace with what happens. They know what they need to do. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, then you know, it's not like they've, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's not going to be this situation where they've, you know, made a massive mistake. I suspect, you know, even you guys having seen limited amount of City this season, will be able to predict what side Guardiola's going to play. I don't think it will be a shock to anybody. So it's just, it just basically comes down to factors on the night, whether they can do it on the night or whether it's Chelsea that are the ones that do it instead. So I think they're kind of at peace with everything and quite relaxed going into it.
You mentioned Gundogan there. Is he the only injury doubt? Is it fully fit squad other than that? And how likely is he to play?
I think Gundogan will play. He said himself in that press conference on Monday that he's fit. He went off against Brighton as a precaution and then didn't play any minutes whatsoever. But he said himself he played in every training session in the time since. So he's fit. I think the lineup basically picks itself. The only question marks are whether Rodri plays over Fernandinho, because that's been a little bit of a swap around in the last few weeks, and whether Cancelo plays over Zinchenko, because as good as Cancelo's been this season, he's had a rather untimely drop of form in the kind of last few weeks of the season, kind of round about midway point of that first PSG tie was the point at which he went off, and has kind of been dropped behind Zinchenko since then for the key games. So they're the only two question marks. Everybody else, I mean, is kind of as you would expect.
David, Tuchel is the only coach to have beaten Pep and City twice this season. Is there any sense that he's got the Indian sign over Pep?
I know the fans are worried about that. I think what Guardiola... It's a difficult situation, because what City have done this season that they haven't done in other seasons is it's almost like there's been an A and a B team, except City's B team is still pretty good. It's just been the players that have been out of form that have been in the B team rather than the players that are not quite as good. So you have, like, for instance, Raheem Sterling's had quite a disappointing season, I think. He was good in the first half of the season. The second half of the season, he's really dropped off, and he's been in that second sort of 11. But I wouldn't by any stretch of the imagination say that he's a bad player. And now we're in this situation where he had, for the title running, because the title was pretty much sewn up because of the distance that they put between themselves and United, he was able to use the leeway in the Premier League to dominate in the Champions League in those games where he previously used the leeway of having a first leg and ended up getting knocked out. So what ended up happening was this second sort of 11 was playing the Premier League games. The first 11, so-called, would play in the Champions League games. And you would see a very different City performance. And it just so happens that the two Chelsea games, I was actually a little bit annoyed with him for the selection he picked in the FA Cup semi-final, because, you know, there's an opportunity there to make another cup final. And the team selection basically said, we need to concentrate on PSG and the League Cup final coming up. And I thought he could have done a little bit more of a balancing act and played a little bit more of a mixture of the two sorts of sides. And so that first game was a City side that was packed full of good players, but was a little bit disjointed and weren't playing well together. And I'm not going to sit here and say that City were unlucky to lose the semi-final. I thought Chelsea were much the better side and deserved the win. The league game, same sort of thing. I think the little bit of a factor in the league game was Guardiola had said that he didn't want his first 11, so to speak, to go out there, play Chelsea and beat them, and then end up in a situation where they expect the final to be easy because they've beaten them already recently. Now, I don't think that, I don't know how much of a factor that would be in the final, to be honest with you. But equally, it also meant that he ended up playing this really weird, disjointed team that had Raheem Sterling and Ferran Torres as central midfielders. And you kind of go, well, there's not a lot to read into that, because if they do that in the final, then somebody, you know, somebody's going to have to write a letter of apology somewhere. So I don't know. I do think there is a confidence from Chelsea to be gained from beating City twice recently. I do think City will also take confidence in the idea that they haven't played their first 11. And there is also, I mean, Tuchel's not an idiot. He's going to know how City are going to set up for this game, and he's going to know what the first 11 are going to do. But the one thing he hasn't got is the lived experience of having played against it. And the one thing, like, for instance, City in that first tie with PSG, We all knew how good PSG's delivery was going to be from set pieces. We knew Di Maria could really whip the ball in from corners, for instance. And yet that was how they scored, because it was City hadn't experienced it and didn't know how to defend it. And it was a really, really tough opening kind of half hour or so. So that, I think, is Guardiola's main hope. You know, Chelsea haven't played the all guns blazing City under Tuchel yet. And I don't think the game with Lampard back in January or so has much impact on this final now. Everything's changed for both sides since then. So I think it'll be a really tense and interesting game because of that. And I'm expecting Chelsea will know what to expect from City. And it's going to be a case of now, you know, who holds the nerve, I guess, more than anything else.
Sort of touching on that theme, actually, but slightly different. Is it more significant that Man City has sort of had a fairly relaxed last few weeks and perhaps will be going into this game a lot fresher, and perhaps looking at the fact that Chelsea lost three of the last four games, that Chelsea are sort of showing signs of fatigue, of that sort of having to fight on all three fronts right to the very end?
I actually don't think it has any significance whatsoever, because, I mean, let's flip it the other way around. If Chelsea win the final, then it's quite easy to say that City lost rhythm in the last few games because they had nothing to play for in those games. If City win the final, it's quite easy to say they did it because they had easy games and they had rest. So I think it probably does a disservice to whoever wins the game, because whoever wins the game deserves to win it. And that's it, really. City's run in was fairly easy. They rotated the team a couple of times and kind of they played a bizarre setup that included Scott Carson against Newcastle for no reason whatsoever. I can only assume Edison was still a bit tipsy from the celebrations in the week before. And then they played Brighton, and actually they got quite a good run out against Brighton because they ended up with a man sent off after 20 minutes or so. So it was quite a good exercise in fitness, even if they got the run around from what is, I genuinely think, one of the most unlucky sides in the Premier League that we've had for a long time. And then the final day of the season, Everton were very passive. City looked good, but it was against a very passive Everton side, and then that was dominated by the Aguero narrative. So I don't really think there's a lot to read into it. I think for Chelsea fans who will worry about the recent form of having lost three or four, as you say, ultimately it's a final, and you know, I know Chelsea lost to Leicester in the FA Cup final, but they. It is a one-off game, and teams raise the game for it. And City go into this one as favourites. Chelsea went into the FA Cup final as favourites. And, you know, the favourites don't always win. That's kind of how it works. And I come back round to that point. It is probably just going to be, you know, who holds the nerve on the night and you know, who doesn't let the occasion get to them, because I think both of these sides are very, very good sides.
Do you get the sense that Aguero is someone that Pep would actually turn to in this game, even if he doesn't start necessarily? Because we've always got the impression that Pep has never quite been as keen on Aguero as everyone else seems to be. And then there was the whole strange situation where he doesn't bring him on until 65 minutes of his last game, where he's chasing a Premier League record. So do you think he actually factors into Guardiola's plans for this game? Because he's had plenty of really good days against Chelsea in the past.
Yeah, I mean, if it was up to the fans, we'd all pick him, because like it's like a natural reflex. If Aguero's available, you pick him. But I think a lot was made of the relationship between Guardiola and Aguero. Back in 2016, when Guardiola arrived, there was a lot of talk that Aguero wasn't the right sort of player. He doesn't run enough. And Aguero kind of went, well, sod that. I'm going to do what you tell me to do. And it was almost like this really weird passive-aggressive situation where you end up with two people who don't really like each other but getting the best out of each other because they want to prove the other one wrong, sort of thing. And so Aguero changed his game. He started doing a lot more running and pressing, and it all worked really well. And then this season, his big issue has been that knee injury. We saw it with I'm going to make a comparison now that sounds really, really unfair, but we saw it with Benjamin Mendy. Mendy looked good for the first three or four games that he arrived at City, did his knee, came back, did a similar injury again, and it just means that every time he plays, he might play really well, But he then, you know, in the coming days afterwards, the knee swells up and he has to take a couple of games off. And Aguero has kind of famously needed three or four games to get back into his rhythm after an injury. So the big problem has been this season that he hasn't been able to have that time. He hasn't been able to have a run of games because he might get two or three games on the bounce, but then the knee flares up again and he has to sit two or three out. So I think for that entire reason, I think he'll start against Chelsea on the bench. And I think unless City are comfortable in the game, weirdly, I don't think he comes on. I think there are players that City can turn to that are much more trusted to change the game this season. And that's not a slight on what Aguero can do, because when he's fit, he's the best striker that I've ever seen. The problem is his fitness, and he just has had a season where, you know, one week after the next, it's been fine one week, not fine the next, fine one week, not fine the next. And it's just killed him. And that's why he comes on against Everton and plays really, really well. And, you know, breaks the Premier League record, scores the two goals. But the truth was, he wasn't fit enough to start the game. So it's kind of where we're at. And it's really sad to see. If given the option, I'd you know, get another contract under his nose right now and get it signed for another season. But, you know, what do they always say? Always leave him wanting more. And that's kind of where we're at. I would worry if he signed another season that it'd be a season of like this one, sat on the bench for the vast majority of it and City playing false nines left, right and centre.
It's me again, David. I just want to know. I just want to know: will the fans sort of be in love with this competition if they win it? You know, it's obviously been well documented the booing of the anthem, etc. And secondly, how sort of it was an obsession for Abramovich and the Holy Grail of winning this Champions League. How much would it also mean to Man City, to tick the owners particularly, to tick this off the box? Is this the missing piece that they've been craving?
I think this is why I'm nervous, you know, because I've seen City win Premier League titles, I've seen them win the League Cup, I've seen them win the FA Cup, but I've never even seen them in a European final. And I liken it to the nerves that I felt ahead of the FA Cup final in 2011 when City won the first trophy in 35 years. Because I'm 33 now, so I wasn't even born when they were last in a major final in 81, and so they got to that final, and I was thinking, well, they're going into it as favourites against Stoke, and I'm really, really nervous because I've never seen City trusted to win on the occasion before, and I didn't think I felt like that about the Champions League, and yet here we are, you know, a couple of days before the game, and I am bricking it because I don't know I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Guardiola's going to play some stupid mind games and you know, play a ridiculous formation or match Chelsea up or whatever. I don't know. And it occurred to me that I think City fans are not in love with the Champions League. I think the problem for City fans generally is the group stage of the Champions League and not the knockout phase. The knockout phase is fantastic. You get some brilliant ties and you get some excellent games of football that are really tense and really, you know, you get through them, you deserve to get through them sort of thing. Whereas, as you know, it's really hard to get up for the fifth season in a row of playing Shakhtar Donetsk and beating them 4-0. It's just like what's the point of these games? And you kind of strip it back and go, it's obviously a money-making exercise for everybody. There's a reason why the Champions League is a group format first, because it guarantees more games for the teams to play. But if it was a straight knockout from the start, I reckon City fans would be a lot more in love with it because there's jeopardy from the beginning of it. And I mean, that isn't to say that Liverpool fans, Chelsea fans, United fans, whoever, don't also feel the same way about the group stage. I think City fans are a lot more. I think they're a lot less accepting of how it is, because I think a lot of them, and I'd say myself included to a point, don't feel particularly enamoured by the histories and traditions of the Champions League, because we were never in it when it started, and it was one of those things that we always saw it was always for other people, and now here we are and in it. So I think winning it would do a great deal for it, but equally I don't think City fans are going to suddenly turn around and start loving UEFA, because what fans have a great relationship with the governing body of a sport. It just doesn't happen, does it? So I don't think there's I think City fans will continue continue to feel unwelcome by UEFA. I think UEFA will continue to, I mean, we saw it with the ticket prices. And one thing I do want to say actually is a big well done to the Chelsea fans for not biting on UEFA's tickets and sending them back, because the ticket prices for this game in an era where we're in the kind of the time that we're living in right now were frankly ridiculous. And the fact that UEFA had the cheek to say that football was for the fans a few weeks before that and then do this, I was utterly horrified by. So you know, credit to the Chelsea fans for doing that, because if nobody does it, then they continue to charge those prices, and that's kind of where we're at. So it's an interesting thing. I think the owners are desperate to win it. I think it's the one missing piece of the puzzle, as you say. I don't think that'll have too much of an impact on the game, because I think City and Guardiola, and I think Guardiola especially, knows what he has to do from this game. Whether it works or not is another matter, because Tuchel's no mug either.
David, I would say enjoy the game on Saturday, but that would be disingenuous, so I'll just say thanks. Yes, thanks for joining us.
Don't worry.
David Mooney there. Let's hope he's a blue Mooney on Sunday morning. Before we go, let's get some predictions. Not a scoreline, though. Something more interesting than that, please. Simon, you've kind of stolen mine already. I was going to say Kepa chosen to come on for Mendy at the end of extra time for pens, only for Mendy to refuse to leave the pitch, Thomas Tuchel to try and fail to throw his lanyard to the ground, and then it all to kick off. But yeah, I think that's probably quite unlikely. Can you give us a prediction?
Timo Werner to score, which in itself is a story, but the offside flag to stay down... I think that would definitely
penalty
be a glorious one. Yeah. So that'd be my one.
That's quite fantastical. Dom, have you got one?
I think, given his association and everything, the influence he had over the two previous European Cup finals in which Chelsea have featured, with sending off in Moscow and an equaliser, a concession of a penalty in the winning spot kit in Munich, I've got Didier Drogba to run down from his seat high up in the stands at the Dragao and join in the post-match celebrations, despite all breaking all kinds of COVID protocols in the process. Join in the post-match celebrations on the pitch as Chelsea win the European Cup, and then to be filmed in the dressing room afterwards on a table, cradling the trophy in his hands and saying, "How long? Why have you eluded us for so long?"
Lovely image.
I thought it was going to end with him being sort of carried off or something, and him going, "It's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace." It's a disgrace. Then Ovrebo turning up and ruining it all,
disallowing all Chelsea's goals.
Go on then, Liam, finish us off.
I'm going to say Kai Havertz giving Chelsea an early lead.
Yeah,
and then
waking
18,
up.
And then a 94th minute Manchester City equaliser being ruled out by VAR coming to Chelsea's rescue for once.
Gee, that would be nice. And then Kai Havertz running up to the press box and wrapping you in a big hug and thanking you for all the support you've given him all season, which is what's got him through. So Liam's going to be in Porto. The Athletic is the place to be this weekend for all the very best Champions League final coverage and reaction. Remember to head to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up now if you aren't currently a subscriber. And many thanks to David for joining us. Also to Dom, Simon and Liam and producer Lucy, and to you, listener. We'll be back with our reaction pod on Monday. Until then, goodbye and good luck.
The Athletic.